Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio, where every week we try and bring you all the news, notes, and hottest scoops from around the league, both on and off the football field.
We'll examine the San Francisco 49ers issue, specifically with Alden Smith. Chris Johnson is a Jet now. We'll also check in on the two Super Bowl teams.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm from Shutdown Corner at YahooSports.com and Arthur Arkish from ChicagoFootball.com and USA Today Sports Weekly. And as we do every week, we'll get you up to date on all that has gone on, at least the top stories in the National Football League since we last visited last weekend. And gentlemen, I guess we have to start in San Francisco this week. Alden Smith, the mercurial one, the troubled one, the silly one, because I don't know if there's any other way to explain this, but Eric, Alden Smith told TSA workers at the Los Angeles airport that he had a bomb. And apparently his version of the story is he got mad, he got frustrated, he was being hassled, he was just joking around. You gotta be smart enough in this day and age to know that's not a joke you make. And, apparently the joke didn't go over all that well. And he has some serious potential legal issues now.
Yeah, nor should it. And, you know, there was some evidence, there were some reports that perhaps he was drinking, and everyone remembers, the rehab session that he went through, the late night drinking before a practice day during the season last year. And, you know, it's our fault. It's the 49ers' fault. It's Alden Smith's fault. You know, we didn't really circle back on this story. You know, he came back and it was like, okay, well, I guess he's fine. I guess he's all well and good. I guess he's been fixed and repaired. Well, you know, rehab is not that clean. It's not that easy. It's not that finger snapping quick. And somewhere along the line, there was a disconnect. Either Alden Smith thought he was fine and just went back to his normal behavior. Either the team didn't realize what was going on, didn't follow up closely enough, or he had a relapse, or there was something else going on. So, you know, more of this story is going to come out, but it appears that Alden Smith needs a little guidance in life.
Now, there are reports all over the Bay Area and the West Coast, Arthur, that it's possible the 49ers may choose to move on from Alden Smith. Certainly don't intend to, at this date, exercise the option on his contract for 2015. Suggestions from some local media out there that he may not even be with the club in 2014. It seems a bit premature for that, but there's no question that he's at the end of the line with the San Francisco 49ers unless he comes up with some pretty good answers.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. You only get so many chances. And I would also agree that it's probably still a little bit premature. I would expect the 49ers to wait for the legal process to unfold, as most teams do in these cases, although obviously this is a pretty unique set of circumstances. But what's troubling is that beyond the well-documented legal issues that he's had that, you know, as I said, are well-documented and have made it out to the media, there's been some rumblings that there's been some bizarre behavior behind the scenes, that there's some other things that have been pretty alarming for 49ers brass. And it kind of circles back to what Eric said. Such a young kid, you know, it's hard to get things right on your first try and going to rehab. And maybe there was a little bit too much of a presumption that he had everything figured out. And it sounds, you know, again, like Eric said, like there's still a lot of troubles here. And it doesn't bode well, you know, for the 49ers as things stand right now. Or Alden Smith, of course.
Well, and we should point out there is a good chance, I'm not going to give odds on it, but there's a very real chance that this will eventually go away by itself. This is potentially a federal charge, and yet the reality is he obviously didn't have a bomb, never had a bomb, was never really a threat to anybody. What he did was galactically stupid, but it's quite possible that the federal government, irrespective of the fact that he's a well-known football player, will decide that this one is not worth pursuing through the courts. Nonetheless, a lot of rehab work, and that word chosen specifically and purposely, remains for Alden Smith if he's to have any future at all with the San Francisco 49ers. Another player who's been troubled on and off, Chris Culliver, of course, involved in a hit-and-run accident a few weeks ago. Strange reports, Eric, that he may have been in the same airport and the same terminal at the time that this happened, and yet nobody has connected him to Alden Smith's silliness or even indicated that they can prove that they were together at the time.
Yeah, I don't believe they, you know, I think everyone kind of feels like this just was totally weird and coincidental and all that stuff. But, you know, he's got the hit and run charge. He made some very questionable homophobic comments at the Super Bowl. This is somebody who I think you would have to say is a character red flag, brass knuckles. I mean, this is something that, boy, I mean, if I'm the 49ers, at minimum, I am parting ways with him just to send a message that, hey, we are serious about the character of this football team and how we are represented publicly, and then deal with Smith, as you said, once charges are or are not filed. So, you know, I mean, either way, I mean, when it comes to Smith, they've got a decision looming on May 3rd in terms of deciding whether to pick up that fifth-year option. He was a first-round pick in the new CBA. And so they've got to decide basically what they're doing, if they're going to pay this guy $10 million or let him go, you know, hit the market essentially in 2015. So some big decisions looming for this franchise.
Well, it's been a tough off season. It really kicked off basically the off season at the combine with reports that Jim Harbaugh was happy and he could be moving on. That has all gone extremely quiet. Both he and Trent Baalke have said the right things. It appears that there's no issue there at this time. And yet they've gotten rid of three-fourths of their starting secondary, allowing Terrell Brown and Dante Whitner and Carlos Rogers to move on via free agency, as well as wide receiver Mario Manningham and running back Anthony Dixon. Now rumors that they're looking to trade LaMichael James. The only additions via free agency, well, three new defensive backs, Antoine Bethea, who I believe is a big upgrade over Dante Whitner at safety, but then castoffs at cornerback Chris Cook from Minnesota, Parrish Cox from Seattle. And so, Arthur, it's still a very, very talented team, but I think the best we can say is that the offseason has not gone in any way close to what the 49ers would have hoped it would.
Yeah, there's no question. Still a very talented team, but at the same time, and of course we didn't mention Navarro Bowman, who is expected to miss quite a bit of time coming off the major knee injury. So it troubles me quite a bit. I mean, you speak of the roster still having, you know, it's still loaded, certainly, but you need continuity in the defensive backfield, and to have at least three new faces back there. And we all know how important it is to have a pass rush and a secondary working in unison. And now you're talking about your best pass rusher suddenly being gone too. So this defense could have a different look, and it wouldn't shock me to see it have a little bit of troubles. Now they're in good hands with Vic Fangio. We've seen this team battle adversity before, but gosh, they'll have to do so again. It's been a very tumultuous offseason, to say the least.
All right, gentlemen, a couple other teams have been very busy in the last week or so. The New York Jets, one of them. We'll take a look at the Jets offseason to date, upgrades and downgrades, right after this commercial break. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, and the New York Jets had the biggest news of the week as they have signed themselves a former 2,000-yard single-season rusher. There aren't a lot of those to go along, or go around, I should say, but Chris Johnson, formerly of the Tennessee Titans, is one. Now, he had 2 years remaining on a $54 million mega deal in Tennessee that would have netted him about $9 or $10 million a year over the next two seasons. He signs with the Jets for a total of $8 million, about $4 million a year, with maybe another $1 million in bonuses. And yet, I don't think anybody, Arthur, other than maybe Chris Johnson, was surprised that the market wasn't better for him. As a matter of fact, I'm a little surprised that he cost the Jets as much as he did.
Yeah, you said it. I think at the end of the day, I'm sure CJ didn't get what he feels he's worth, but I think most other NFL teams and observers like yourself were a little bit surprised that he did end up to cash in on $8 million. It was a kind of push the going rate up for these veteran running backs in what's really been a slow market. So I can't decide what to make of this signing. I have to think that even at $8 million, it was probably worth the risk for the Jets. They add some desperately needed speed and explosion to an offense that really had none of it last season. And then on the other side of the token, I just wonder, I think CJ's tenure in Nashville ended prematurely in large part because his effort on the field wasn't always what it needed to be. And I can't see that going over with a guy like Rex Ryan or a media hotbed for attention like New York. So, you know, it could go great. He could turn into that home run hitter again, and this could be a home run move for the Jets and John Idzik, or I could see it backfiring quickly. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Well, you know, Rex Ryan will let it play to his ego a little bit, too, and he'll certainly enjoy having a player of Johnson's stature. But I guess, you know, one of the big issues, Eric, is that will Chris Johnson be happy as the number two back, the 1A back, one of three, when you know Belial Powell and Chris Ivory are going to get their share of the carries, too? It's a guy who's used to 290 carries a year, and he's not going to get that with the New York Jets.
Yeah, I'm sure they had some kind of conversation where they said, hey, look, Chris Ivory is going to be our first and second down guy, maybe our 4 minute back. You know, Bilal Powell can be our third down back, our pass catcher, pass protector, and you're going to be our home run guy. You're going to be our big hit guy. And we think that with 180 carries or 220 carries, somewhere in that range, you're going to be a more effective player. So I'm guessing that conversation had to happen, and I'm doubting that there's any other team that said we wanted to make Chris Johnson a 300-carry guy. That said, I think ground and pound is back. I think they want to run the football this season. Everything points to it, and yet they still need more weapons. They got the one home run hitter with Johnson, but nothing really else that scares you in that lineup.
Well, on the wild card here, of course, is the other moves that they've made. They let Bruno Giancamini come in to play tackle. He'll replace Austin Howard, who has moved on in a kind of a silly deal to the Raiders. But then you've got the signing of Eric Decker at wide receiver, and, of course, the big one, Mike Vick at quarterback. Now, what they're saying is that Geno Smith is number one on the depth chart right now, but that's until the first day of off-season workouts and training camp that there will be some competition there, and I'm hard-pressed to see how Mike Vick, Arthur, doesn't become the starting quarterback of this football team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Mike Vick is definitely going to prove to be the better option, at least at this stage of the game, over Geno Smith. And heck, for the 10-11 games he can give you, I think that could be a nice move. And like I said, an upgrade there. I mean, I see this offense as being a lot better than it was at the end of last season. Eric Decker is not a true number one, but he will look nice in that offense if they can get someone on the other side of him that's really going to be able to give him more advantageous matchups like he had in Denver. So some interesting happenings, and the Jets, as we know, are nothing if not interesting once again. We'll have to see if they're the kind of train wreck you can't look away from, or if some of this talent that they've assembled actually kind of gets them over the hump. You know, they were pretty competitive, surprisingly so, in the AFC East last season.
And it's interesting to me, Eric, that we've got a little bit of Rex Ryan, of all people, finally saying, I'm not going to fight City Hall anymore. And what I'm getting at there is some of the house cleaning that they did. You know, Chris Johnson had become less productive in Tennessee, but it's no secret that Ken Wisenhunt wanted him out of that locker room. And you look at what the Jets did, there's only one reason that Santonio Holmes and Antonio Cromartie are gone. They just weren't worth the aggravation anymore. Of course, Mark Sanchez is gone because of, well, a number of reasons Mark Sanchez is gone, and then Howard just got away for financial reasons. But here they clean things up a little bit, and then they bring in a potential distraction like Chris Johnson.
Yeah, and you know, everyone wants to say that there's this struggle between Idzik and Rex Ryan over the personnel on the roster, and that maybe the Jets weren't aggressive enough for Ryan's liking. I mean, you know, anytime you watch Darrelle Revis and other free agent cornerbacks not land in New York, obviously he had to be upset with that. That's something that was a big story probably about a month ago. I don't believe this is a concession signing. I think they are okay with his character. You know, feeling like, okay, you know, if we give him the ball enough, he can kind of keep him in check a little bit. But, you know, I'd be worried about his long-term health. I don't know that this is a player that's going to be in the league long. You know, he's always seemed like a guy that was going to have the big explosion. He did it with the 2,000-yard season and then be somebody who just kind of burns out. And I kind of wonder if that's not him with a couple of bad knees and not a lot of good work on tape the last couple seasons.
All right, guys, we're going to take another quick commercial break here. Another team that's been awfully active is the Denver Broncos. Everybody focused on what they've added. What about what they've lost? We'll take a look in just a minute. You have Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial as we go around the NFL, that kind of slow period where free agency is near an end, although we are going to talk about some of the best remaining free agents before this show ends. We've got the draft still, well, 4 weeks away, but coming on us, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the top prospects as well, and maybe some potential movement at the top of the first round. But right now, guys, I want to look at the Denver Broncos. And you know, Eric, I was struck as I studied them a little bit this week. Everybody knows they've added Aqib Talib and T.J. Ward and DeMarcus Ware, Emmanuel Sanders. You know, four pretty significant free agent signings. Sanders in the hopes that he can match or replace the production lost in Eric Decker. You know, T.J. Ward adding a safety, Aqib Talib adding a corner as they say goodbye to Champ Bailey. And, of course, DeMarcus Ware is a difference maker. Now, you get Von Miller back to 100%, which he never was, by the way, when he came back from a suspension last year. You got some star power. But look at the defections in free agency. Offensive guard Zane Beatles. We mentioned Eric Decker. Dominique Rogers, Cromartie, on at cornerback, Robert Ayers at defensive end, Noshon Marino, Wesley Woodyard at linebacker, Sean Phillips at linebacker, Trendon Holiday, their best kick returner, Champ Bailey. Now, Bailey did miss a good part of the season last year, But they've lost a lot of production in Sean Phillips and Wesley Woodyard, and Ayers gave them something on occasion. And it's nice that they've made these additions, but did they have the kind of depth to withstand all these losses and be able to say without a concern that they're a better football team right now?
I'm curious about it. I mean, it's a factor. You know, I mean, Manning's obviously going to come back and give them a chance to win, and they've got some special talents around them, and there's all that. And I think there's a great chance at number 31 that they're going to land a very good football player, somebody who might even start for them. What if it's a middle linebacker like Ryan Shazier from Ohio State? You know, they have a chance to even get better through the draft, which you don't think about for the Super Bowl runner-up. But you're right. I mean, they got pretty lucky. I know they had a couple of big injuries last year, but there wasn't a wide swath of them. They didn't have 10 or 12 guys go down throughout the course of the season. What happens if that occurs this year? That's going to really test that second team a little bit.
Arthur, I'm looking at this, and I love Aqib Talib when he's on the football field, but he is off the field, it seems, as much as he is on. I was on the sidelines calling their games for Westwood, won a couple games last year, and specifically that first Chiefs game when Von Miller had arguably his best game after the suspension, and yet he still wasn't Von Miller in that game. He was never right last year. Now he's coming back from an ACL. I love DeMarcus Ware, but, you know, he was cut loose because injuries have kept him from being productive the last couple of years. As big as these signings are, they all come with some very significant question marks.
Yeah, there's no question. You talk about Talib at the top, and, you know, I don't think there's any surprise that the way the Broncos were able to script the contract gave them an out after a season if they weren't feeling good about things. So it kind of speaks to some of the volatility that he brings. And, you know, you can say the same for some of these other guys. You know, Von Miller has said all the right things. He said that he's ready to step up on and off the field and kind of be that guy that the Broncos have missed a little bit as he's went through some of his issues and growing pains. But yeah, there's no question. A lot of turnover. You always wonder when you kind of shake things up like this, even with the roster this talented. Here's the ultimate irony for you. This all-world offense from last season is the side of the ball I may be a little bit more worried about. Not with Peyton Manning, of course, but his protection. I mean, it's not like John Elway isn't still thinking about the way Manning was battered in the Super Bowl. And, you know, you say goodbye to Zane Beadles. You do have a vacancy there up front. And you let your best pass protecting running back get away and no Sean Moreno. So that's a big step up for Monte Ball. And it seems like they may have some depth issues there as well. It's really interesting how things can turn so quickly in that respect. Not that I don't expect them to still be completely explosive, because they will, but they might be a little bit more vulnerable.
The other storyline we've heard quite a bit this week, Eric, is that Peyton Manning letting it be known that he is finally over his post-Super Bowl remorse, hangover, call it what you will, and now getting ready and excited about taking another run in 2014. I couldn't imagine that Peyton Manning would feel any other way about playing football for the Denver Broncos. But let's be honest, as each new season comes, and we even wondered about this last year, you wonder, can Peyton Manning be Peyton Manning, and is it possible this is the last hurrah?
Well, yeah, right. Obviously at his best. I mean, we're talking about a 606 point team last year, MVP level stuff. The opener was as scintillating as anything we can imagine on the football field, 7 touchdown game against the Ravens. But yeah, I mean, at his worst, that regular season game against the Patriots, the Super Bowl, boy, he looked old and slow. And I'm not saying that's the player he is. And for the most part, I think we're talking about somebody truly still special, but you know, there are going to be those moments where he's not going to be at his best, and his body is going to reject what he's trying to do. So, you know, it's something to always keep in the back of the mind, like you said, in what could be his swan song season.
And, Arthur, I think the one thing we have to be honest about, again, I was on the sidelines for several of their games last year, and when you talk strictly about arm strength and the ability to throw deep or rifle the ball into tight spots, if you took the 32 NFL quarterbacks today, the starters, Peyton Manning would be somewhere in the middle. Now, he's still one of the two or three best. There's no question about that. But the neck injury, the surgeries have taken their toll on the strength of that arm.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement, but I think it's been fascinating and so impressive to watch Peyton's transformation a little bit. You've seen the offense kind of tailored to maybe his different strengths now. He's always going to be the smartest guy on the field, and he's always going to have the best anticipation. But now you're seeing an offense that really thrives on seeing guys game breakers like Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas turning short throws into long gains, and that's to a credit to the way they've built that system, and you know, we'll continue to see that moving forward for sure.
All right, gentlemen, the defending world champion Seattle Seahawks, we've never been able to say that before, their offseason, the additions and the subtractions don't add up. Let's talk about where they're at in just a moment.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Yes, we are. And we are taking a look at some of the higher profile NFL teams in this week's show. And we've touched a little bit on a tough offseason so far for the 49ers. A lot of activity with the Jets and the Broncos. And now we'll check in the great Northwest, where the Seattle Seahawks are still enjoying the glow of their extremely impressive Super Bowl championship run. And yet you wonder what the plan is there. They have said goodbye to their number two receiver, Golden Tate. Both of their, well, I don't know which one was their fifth cornerback, Brandon Browner or Walter Thurman. Both were starters until they got dinged up. And, of course, Byron Maxwell has stepped in now. Two very productive and important defensive linemen in Red Bryant and Chris Clemons are gone, as well as their starting right tackle, Brino Giacomini, who's moved on to the New York Jets. Now, all of these moves, players that were not worthy of the salary cap dollars they would command as the Seahawks look forward to trying to re-sign Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. And yet, Arthur, there have been no additions. They have retained Michael Bennett. They've brought Sidney Rice back, and that's it. Now, this was a very good football team, but were they that deep to say goodbye to this kind of frontline talent and still be the front runners for the championship again this year?
Well, it's certainly a fair question, and I think you definitely hit the nail on the head where you said John Schneider, Pete Carroll have to be looking ahead. They know they've got some guys, some young guys who are going to command top dollar. So it's all about prioritizing. You have to be able to pick and choose, and you have to cut bait in certain places. So, I mean, it just speaks to the strength of the cornerbacks. It speaks to the development that we saw in season with Byron Maxwell and Jeremy Lane, that they don't have to worry so much, or at least we don't think that they're too concerned about letting Walter Thurman and Brandon Browner get away. You know, the loss that concerns me the most actually is Golden Tate. I've been so impressed with what Russell Wilson's been able to do, and obviously having Marshawn Lynch and, you know, a run-oriented offense has really aided his development. But I look at this receiving core and I don't see anyone that scares you except, of course, Percy Harvin, but he scares me for all the wrong reasons. I've been vocal on this show time and time again. I don't trust him. He's been too fragile. We saw that last season. And I just wonder who they're going to have step up in the receiving core to give them some options down the field.
Well, and Eric, this is where it gets interesting, because I completely support and agree with all of what Arthur says about Percy Harvin and the lack of depth at the position. I'm just not a big enough Golden Tate fan to worry about that. And I will take a healthy Sidney Rice over Golden Tate. I don't believe that Percy Harvin can be planned on to be healthy for a full season, so you got to worry. And I think they're okay at corner, certainly with Byron Maxwell. But where I wonder about this team is they were not consistently good up front on defense the way they were in the playoffs. And Chris Clemons and Red Bryant are two very productive football players. And they basically said, if we're going to pay Michael Bennett, we got to let these guys move on. I like Michael Bennett. Do they have enough left beside him? There's a big bet on Bruce Irvin here, who's another guy that you're just not sure about yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Seahawks fans were giddy when they thought, okay, if our collateral damage is losing Red Bryant, as much as we love him, we're okay with that. And then, you know, when you look at the stats, and they're meager. I mean, he didn't do anything in terms of the stat box, but he's always been a player that did way, way more than the numbers indicated. And I think you're right. Playing that 4-eye or that 5 technique, I mean, just eating up blockers and letting other people, those great linebackers, make the plays, their safeties, et cetera. That role has to be filled somewhere. They need another wide receiver. I still think the offensive line got away with murder considering the personnel and the depth they had last year. They basically got lucky that those guys, those tackles, were able to come back healthy. They lose Giacomini now. I think they need a tackle. I think they need a guard. So, yeah, there's still some needs. And they play in, oh, by the way, the toughest division in football.
Well, and Arthur, it's interesting in that all these problems for the 49ers, you wonder if the Seahawks are deep enough to overcome this kind of turnover. And what you don't hear a lot of conversation about is that the Arizona Cardinals were the best team not to make the playoffs in the National Football League last year. And I think the arrow is pointing straight up for the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, you know, a lot of young talent on both of those clubs. It was amazing what Bruce Arians did so quickly in year one out in the desert. And you'd expect to see improvement there. I mean, the defense is in terrific shape. They've had a nice offseason too, really shoring up that offensive line for Carson Palmer, who's a placeholder, but one that was, you know, respectable. And when he does get the protection, can still be dangerous. And then we kind of continue to wait on the Rams. Yeah, they sort of lie in the weeds, and they've made all these improvements on defense. And obviously this is a make or break year for Sam Bradford. I might be in the minority, but I've been a little bit surprised with the vote of confidence they've shown in him, just because he hasn't exactly been beyond available. And of course they have all the ammunition in this draft. You'd think that they're going to target a quarterback somewhere, but You know, we hear Jeff Fisher, we hear Les Snead just really giving the utmost confidence to Sam Bradford, and we'll have to see how that works out because, as I said, he's going to have a target on his back this season.
All right, guys, we're going to get to the break just a hair early this time because we want to talk about a bucket full of teams in the next segment, including those St. Louis Rams, who, surprise, surprise, may be holding all the keys to the NFL college draft for the third season in a row. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Arthur Arkish and Eric Edholm, as we bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. And gentlemen, the Detroit Lions are making all kinds of noise, trying to let everybody know. Normally you'd want to be quiet about this. They seem to want the whole world to know they want to move up in the first round of the draft. They are currently sitting at number 10. Apparently they have great desires to be able to draft Sammy Watkins, the wide receiver out of Clemson. Pairing him with Megatron would be fascinating. But then to really make it interesting, they actually brought Jadeveon Clowney in for a workout this past week. Now, here's a team that's gotten Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, and Ziggy Ansah, the number 5 overall pick last year. Would they really go for Jadeveon Clowney as well? I suppose they might. But the only way that happens for either of those players, Clowney or Watkins, is to deal with the St. Louis Rams at number 2. Can the Lions make a move up that far? And would the Rams once again be able to commit highway robbery and what they'd ask in return, Eric, to make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we kind of touched on this a little bit last week, and boy, I didn't necessarily think Clowney was in the picture, like you said, because of the makeup of the roster. If they were going to go for a pass rusher, I would think it would be more like Anthony Barr, because they really don't have that edge-rushing linebacker on the roster. You could pair him opposite Ansah and have a pretty good little thing going, but maybe they see something special in Clowney. Maybe they're just doing their homework, and you're right. I mean, if they're moving up to number 2, and you've got the Atlanta Falcons possibly looking to enter that spot, other teams wanting to get ahead of the Jaguars to take Khalil Mack, something like that. Now that price just keeps going up with every day. And even with the quarterback seemingly sliding in this draft, that really creates an interesting situation and perhaps another goldmine for the Rams, who've been the wheelers and dealers in the draft the last 2 years.
And where this really gets interesting, Arthur, is now enter the Houston Texans, who finally have let some noise leak out this week. They wouldn't be adverse to trading down for the right deal. They've got a huge need at quarterback, but there's no way, you know, all due respect to all the draft experts, you cannot use the number 1 overall pick on a Teddy Bridgewater or a Johnny Manziel with the baggage that they carry. Now, maybe you can with Blake Bortles because of the high ceiling, but it's a gamble. And then you turn to the obvious number 1 choice, which is Jadeveon Clowney, and I'm sure Bill O'Brien could figure out what to do with him, but when you've got J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus already, it's not exactly a need. And so if the Texans could deal down without going too far, maybe get their quarterback at the bottom of the top 10, they're also a team that could be looking to deal here.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was wise of them to kind of, you know, put the feelers out there, at least let other teams know that they are willing and their ears are open. You really said it. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, thinking about what he would be doing on the same line or lined up behind J.J. Watt is just a terrifying thought. I mean, that could be something potentially very special, and we're all still getting accustomed to how special J.J. Watt is. So, you know, I think that that's got to be mighty tempting for them. It does seem like that's the way things are leaning at this point. There's still a lot of Blake Bortles talk that Bill O'Brien could be very tempted by him. But again, I mean, if you believe that whoever's wanting to move up is doing it for, you know, a Sammy Watkins or a Greg Robinson or someone like that, and that the quarterback is not going to be the first guy off the board, then yes, that could definitely give them some added flexibility. And while everyone talks about the Texans maybe just being a quarterback away, it is worth mentioning they do still have some other holes to fill. The offensive line has dropped off quite a bit, and that defense, even despite having J.J. Watt, was not a playmaking unit last year. Now they got a new coordinator in Romeo Crennel, so there is work to be done on that Houston roster.
All right, Eric, it took a little less than a week, and you got to wonder now if Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen and Jay Gruden are sitting back and looking at DeSean Jackson and saying, gee, what do we get into? Because the story has broken. Apparently, he owes his former agent, Drew Rosenhaus, a little over $500,000. That was the ruling by a neutral arbitrator this past week. Now, Jackson will apparently appeal the decision, but at the end of the day, we kept hearing about all the ancillary stuff, all the other issues that come with a DeSean Jackson, and now we have a perfect example right out there in black and white.
Yeah, and you mean like going to a bar and ringing up a $7,000 tab the night after joining the team? So, you know, it's crazy stuff like that. I mean, you know, he's free to do whatever he wants. He can make it rain with $20 bills if he wants, but, you know, that's what this team is taking on and has to be prepared to deal with all of it. The Rosenhaus money that he owes, you know, the fact that he didn't show up for the first set of practices, obviously it was an excused absence, but, you know, DeSean Jackson is a super talented player who came out of college with questions about two things, the concussions and also the character. And that's why he slid to the second round. And that's why Andy Reid felt like he had to mentor him and deal with him as a father of a kid who sort of gotten astray. And that's why Chip Kelly said, I'm done with him. I'm moving on. And yet the Redskins provide a soft landing for him. We'll see how it works out. I mean, as a player, that's kind of exactly what they need. We'll see what the rest of it brings.
Yeah, I just wonder what it would be like to be able to convince somebody to loan me $500,000.
So, I love it.
He can repay it. He's got the money. So
yeah.
Maybe no harm, no foul. Very quickly, Arthur, Dwayne Bowe has made his marijuana charges go away. There was a settlement. he will not be charged further. This is significant because while the Kansas City Chiefs need help at wide receiver, in that remarkable playoff loss to the Indianapolis Colts after Jamaal Charles goes down in the first series, Dwayne Bowe was the best player on the field that day, and he can still be a difference maker for the Chiefs. This was a big deal for their organization to make this problem go away.
Yeah, no question. You know, he pleaded to the lesser charges, so the marijuana is now in the rearview mirror, and you would think it'll allow him to skate any disciplinary actions from the league and Roger Goodell. So yes, a big deal for the organization. I'm still wondering and kind of hoping just to see what it would be like on the field to watch them get that other receiver that's going to be able to take advantage of some of the coverage Dwayne Bowe's attracting, and see how good Alex Smith can really be with some more weapons.
He has been a complete yo-yo, one of the more up-and-down players in the NFL the last 3-4 years, but when he's good, he is really good. We need to take another commercial break. Are there any gems left in free agency? Well, there's still some decent football players out there. Who moves next? We'll talk about it in a moment. What is left for an NFL team to be able to do to get better between now and the NFL college draft? Are there any hidden gems still left in free agency, guys who could, on day one, make your football team better? There's nobody obvious, but there are some interesting players. And so, Arthur, I'm going to come to you first. A couple guys who jump right out at me are linemen, and particularly Anthony Spencer, the kind of a hybrid. You know, I think he's probably best suited to play the outside rushbacker in a 3-4. He could play a hand-on-the-ground defensive end. He's still available out there. And then on the other side of the ball, offensive tackle Bruce Campbell was with the Jaguars, probably, I'm sorry, the Panthers, you know, maybe the best offensive lineman out here. But here's a couple guys who you would think might generate some interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the case of Campbell, if the Panthers, a team that is pretty hard up for offensive line help right now, kind of had a rough offseason due to retirement and other issues, if they're not interested, that kind of maybe raises a red flag. But I think that sort of term red flag is what we need to mention at this juncture of free agency with these guys. And hey, Anthony Spencer's a heck of a football player when he's on the field and when he's right. But my guess is that most NFL teams have serious doubts to whether he can stay on the football field, a little worried about some of the injuries that have crept up in recent years. So, you know, whether it's injuries or age or off-field stuff, that's why guys last this long, regardless of what type of free agent market it is. And obviously in a draft like this, where everyone is just really excited about not only the talent up at the top, but the depth, it would seem that these guys are going to have to wait a little bit longer with the draft right around the corner so teams can see if they can fill those needs on the cheap and then maybe revisit some of these proven veterans with some issues.
Eric Santonio Holmes and Miles Austin are Pro Bowl potential wide receivers who come with huge questions. Holmes of the character variety, Austin of the injury variety. And then there's Denario Alexander, who had his 15 minutes of fame, but before that couldn't stay healthy, and after that got banged up again. These are guys who, in the right situation, might be productive players.
Yeah, I mean, you worry about, you know, Alexander ever playing a game with the number of knee injuries he's had. When he's been out there, he's been special. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's had some real flashes where you think, okay, you know, he's overcome his problems, and yet every year he seems to suffer some kind of knee injury that sets him back. And you know, I'm concerned about him. Now, Holmes, I don't know. I mean, I still feel like he's got one last shot in him. I don't know who or where and who, you know, where it might be or who might give it to him, but I still feel like there's one opportunity left for him. And, you know, the same category I would think would be Jermichael Finley. I mean, I know he's a tight end, but he's sort of that receiving type and, you know, kind of want to see where his health is. He could return to Green Bay just like Anthony Spencer could return to Dallas. On a cheap deal if those, you know, teams don't land the players at those positions in the draft.
Yeah, health is such a big part of it because with Finley, anybody would like to have him if they thought that he was safe to be on a football field. And you look at another tight end in Fred Davis, Arthur, who is either the dumbest human being ever born or the unluckiest. I mean, this guy runs around under a black cloud. And then there's Pat Angerer, who I think is a really good football player and was very productive with the Colts, again, when he was on the football field.
Yeah, right. He's had a hard time staying on the field because of various injuries. He also has some size limitations and I think some range and athleticism limitations that are sort of weighing against him a little bit. But I agree, very productive in his first couple years with the Colts, and his phone could ring eventually. And just circling back to Jermichael Finley, I think it was a great call by Eric. I still wouldn't be too shocked. We'll see what the draft has in store. But to see him return to the Packers, I still don't think would be that crazy. And the difference between him and some of these other younger guys is that he is still a little bit younger, still a little bit more upside to speak of.
Michael Bush, Tashard Choice. You know, Eric, you got to think that Michael Bush would be a little upset and ready to prove something after the way he bombed out in Chicago this past season after a decent 2012.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams that are looking for a bigger back and somebody who can fill that, you know, sort of number two big back role. I mean, maybe he works in that vein. I know the Patriots brought him in for a visit. As you said, I mean, just a terrible season where it looked at one point like he was going to be a very valuable reserve. So, you know, he's somebody that you have to keep in mind. You know, there's still some pretty good players out there that I think, unfortunately, until they get better health news or until the draft happens, they're just going to have to sit and be patient with these things.
All right, guys, we're going to ask everybody to be patient for just a moment longer. One more very quick break, and then we get you to the publisher's pen.
And now with the publisher's pen, here's Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. And I think that the story out of San Francisco this week, and I refer specifically to Alden Smith, Chris Culliver's issues are different and possibly for discussion another time, but it's a story that I just find tremendously sad. And I didn't say that I feel sorry for him. That is something very different. But having dealt with it in my own family, the subject of addiction, and knowing how difficult it can be, if in fact Alden Smith relapsed, and if in fact he is having issues with alcohol and other substances again, it's easy to indict. It's easy to sit back and say, my God, how can you be so dumb? Anybody has to know you don't go into an airport and talk about having a bomb. Now, what would cause you to do that? The possibility that you were impaired and you weren't thinking straight, or that you're just that dumb. But either way, it's just sad. Here is a young man who has every God-given gift in the world. He is probably the best natural pass rusher in the National Football League today. And if, in fact, it is his addiction problems that are causing these issues for him, it is not something of his choice. Trust me when I tell you, with my own family's experience, it is a disease. And I hope that that is the case, or I should say, if that is the case, that he will finally get the help that he so badly needs. That will do it for this edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, our outstanding engineer and producer, and of course, our syndicator and home studio syndication networks. Most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.